peak business groups have signed a joint statement calling on Parliament to reject the government's capital gains tax changes. You'll hear from the Australian industry group's Innes Willocks on breakfast this morning after 7.30. It comes as a snap inquiry into the proposed changes begins in Canberra today. Independent economist Sol Eslake is my guest and joins me now. Sol, welcome back to breakfast.
Thank you for having me, Sally. Good morning.
Is it fair to say that pressure is mounting on the government to announce carve-outs for the CGT changes now?
Well, there are obviously some significant organisations advocating for that, and although I support most of the changes that the government is proposing to make, and I'll say that to the Senate committee later this afternoon when I appear before them, I think there is a strong case for some kind of carve-out for startups because, as many have pointed out, indexation of the cost base for inflation doesn't work for assets that have a cost base of zero at the start, as startups typically do. And therefore, I think it's appropriate that the government consider making some kind of particular provision for startups in the same way that they have for investment in new residential properties. You know, the government wants to see more of that, and I support that. So that's continuing to get both negative gearing and the 50% capital gains tax discount. Something similar to that, perhaps with a scaled phasing down of the discount, or phasing up of the discount, I should say, depending on how long the business is held for before it's sold. I think some provision like that ought to be considered while still supporting the rest of the changes the government's proposing to the system of capital gains tax.
Given we're not hearing critics talk as much about the housing component of the changes, what does that signify to you?
Well, maybe that does say that the case for removing the tax privileges for leveraged investment in housing we've already got, that is established housing, which is where over 80% of the money lent to property investors for the purchase of housing, maybe people who've been arguing for that change, as I have since 1987, have finally won the day.
What could Labor have avoided in the first place had it consulted sooner, do you think?
Well, there might have been greater awareness of the argument that there needs to be some recognition of the particular position of startups, although, again, to be fair to the government, everything that was said in the budget papers and has been said by the Treasurer and the Treasury Secretary, among others, since then, indicates that they're aware of that issue and that they're consulting with business and others about that issue. And given that the tax changes don't come into effect until 1 July next year, there is plenty of time to sort that out and put it into the legislation before the tax changes are due to come into effect. So, as I say, while I support the thrust of what the government is trying to do, I think there is a good case for recognising the way that these changes don't work for startups and making appropriate changes so that they do between now and the 1st of July of next year.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast. You're hearing from independent economist Sol Eslake. The Australian industry group's Innes Willocks is proposing a compromise. He says changes with CGT should apply only to assets acquired from July 2027. He also wants the government to scrap the minimum 30% tax rate, allow tax to be split over multiple years, and broaden small business concessions. Are these proposals valid and workable?
Well, I can understand why Mr. Willocks and other business leaders are making them. I think there is an argument that to impose a minimum 30% rate on capital gains accruing to someone whose income is less than $45,000 in the year in which they're accrued, that's the threshold for the 30% rate. I think that's wrong. I mean, the fundamental principle that I think the government's changes are trying to address is why should someone earning, say, $100,000 in the form of capital gains or through a discretionary trust pay less tax on that $100,000 than someone who earns it in the form of wages and salaries. I think that's a fundamental principle. It goes back as far as Adam Smith, to be honest. But conversely, why should someone who earns, say, $40,000 in capital gains pay more tax on that than someone who earns $40,000 in wages and salaries or interest, which would be the impact of having a minimum 30% rate? So I think that's something the government needs to think about. Likewise with averaging, I mean, our tax system allows people whose income is volatile, such as farmers and sports people and entertainers, to average their income over a period of years, so that just because they happen to have one year in which they do make a considerable amount of money, they're not subject to a higher rate of tax than someone who averages, who gets the same amount of income over a period of 3 or 4 years. I think people who earn capital gains intermittently, or maybe only once or twice in their life, should be able to access some kind of averaging provision. And indeed, that was the case in the capital gains tax regime that Paul Keating introduced in 85 that applied up to 1999. So that's, I think, something that the government needs to consider as well, while still pursuing the fundamental principle that people in similar circumstances ought to be making similar contributions to the cost of providing public services, irrespective of how they have earned that income. Mm.
Sol Eslake, good to have you back on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Sally.